You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, it's the Anfield Rappers, John Gibbons, hosting this week, in for Neil Atkinson, who's on his way home from Glastonbury. Well, I hope he is. Anyway, I hope you all had a lovely time. You as well, if you went. But football is obviously the main thing on the agenda as ever. So I want to do a little bit of a state of play of where we're at. Who the group with us today, and that group is Gareth Roberts, Paul Senior and Josh Sexton. Where we all think we are, what shape we think we're in going into next season currently, with 1 week to go before Liverpool come back for pre-season training. So let's have a look at how pre-season is looking. As I say, the majority of the players are back in Monday, 4th of July. Some of them will only have 3 weeks off by then, so make it a little bit longer. But they normally do a bit of a roll call to see who we get on Monday, the 4th of July. And then they fly to Asia Friday, the 8th. And then there is six games, I think, sort of booked in at the moment. Manchester United in Bangkok on Tuesday, the 12th. Crystal Palace in Singapore, Friday, the 15th. And then back in Europe, there's two games with Red Bull teams. Red Bull Leipzig on Thursday, July 21st at the Red Bull Arena. Salzburg, Wednesday, July 27th at the Red Bull Arena. The different one, Salzburg's one, confusing. Then Community Shield, obviously at the King Power Stadium this year, the week before on the Saturday, and then they play a friendly the week before. The day after, complete opposite of what I said, which is at Anfield, which is a nice one for people to go to. I know a lot of people are looking into to getting tickets. I'll start with you, Paul. How's sort of that feel in terms of a pre-season to you?
I mean, it feels like we've only just finished and it looks like they're starting again. So that's the main thing to say, isn't it? And I was paying zero attention to what was going on with the international fixtures. And when I was seeing that, it only feels like about 10 days ago, was it, that the likes of Jota was going on holiday?
Got injured as well, didn't he, Jota, which is annoying, about a fortnight ago.
So, and then if you're saying that they're back a week today, then it's not an awful lot of time. It wouldn't even be a lot of time to heal from that knock, would it? So never mind have a proper break in the pre-season, especially for someone like him who looked like he needed it. It's tight this year, isn't it? It's a strange one, really, because obviously the bigger picture is that they will, some of them, get a break later on in the year, the Mo Salah included. So they're the sort of players that you need to get back firing, ready to run them pretty much for the whole first half of the season. But this, looking at them fixtures there, it's a very typical sort of Jurgen Klopp way, isn't it? Especially with the double header a day apart. We've done a bit of that over the last couple of seasons.
He played twice at Anfield last season.
That's right. Yeah, was it Osasuna and Bilbao, that right?
That's a fine 10 points.
For this time on a Monday morning, I did very well. It looks like obviously whoever doesn't get involved in the Community Shield game will then be involved in the Strasbourg game. So, it's a good thing. And then obviously down to Fulham, I think we're a bit blessed with the start. I know it's a champion a side that's come up from the Championship and whatnot, but I think in terms of being able to maybe not have to go complete first 11 on the first day, I think that's played out pretty well for us.
Yeah, I'll just read out what some of our other rivals are doing, or just generally some of the clubs of interest have got booked in at the moment. Anyway, it looks like some of them at least have got a few to add. So Arsenal have got 5 games booked in, including 3 in America and 1 at the Emirates. So these home friendlies seem to be more and more prevalent. Chelsea have got 3 games booked in at the moment, all in America, and one of them is against Arsenal. Everton only have 2 games in at the moment, both in the US. Also not brought the kit out yet, which is quite interesting. I've seen Everton Twitter fuming about that. Well, they've not even announced what it looks like. I think it's something to do with wranglings over the sponsor. I'm sure they're playing something when the season starts, but no kids as of yet. Manchester City, only 2 games booked in as well, both in the US, plus obviously the Community Shield. Man United, who are back in training today, which feels very early. 6 games booked in at the moment, including us in Bangkok. 3 games in Australia, so they're going all the way out there, and 1 in Oslo. And Spurs, who've got a lively pre-season, playing 2 games in South Korea, Rangers at Ibrox, and then Roma in Israel. So fair play if you're going to all 4 of them as a Spurs fan. I wanted to do that for a little bit of perspective, Josh, because I felt for the last couple of seasons, and maybe a little bit longer, but I've certainly noticed the last 2, that Liverpool seems to be pretty sorted early on a lot of these things. You know, it's only Manchester United there who seem quite as organised as us. I saw a bit of criticism from Man City supporters last season saying, you know, and I think Arsenal as well, like, why haven't we got sort of more arranged there? City, yeah, as I say, only 2 booked in. You know, they will sort of play other games, but I do feel like Liverpool or a football club are pretty on it in terms of pre-season.
Yeah, it feels like a microcosm of sort of the planning in general and the structure around Liverpool Football Club compared to, you know, some of those clubs on that list in particular. It's felt like in past pre-seasons, Liverpool have had a really strong plan for, you know, knowing when lads are coming back. And I don't know whether that's just, you know, contact between the backroom staff and the players in all the sort of destinations around the world they are on holiday and when they're playing internationals and being in touch with their national team, stuff like that, to know what sort of state they're in, when they're going to get them back and that kind of thing. Whereas with a few other teams, it seems like they play it a bit more ad hoc. They say, like, training starts here, but we know we'll start with a few of the younger players and then our stars will just sort of come back as and when. Whereas like I say, with Liverpool, it feels like it is much more structured, and that's a good thing. I think back to a few years ago with the Raymond the Fitness Egg days of criticising Jurgen Klopp for recovery and that kind of thing. It feels like the club have got, you know, loads better since those days. I certainly haven't seen Raymond popping up at any point with his big egg head. So it feels like the club are starting to get that right now. They've obviously employed this team who've been helping them with, you know, prevention and recovery from injuries as well. It feels like they're making a real conscious effort to allow players to have time to rest. You know, as Paul mentioned, it's increasingly hard to do that these days with how, you know, tight the schedule turnaround is all the time. So I wouldn't be surprised if you know, lads like Jota and maybe a few others who've sort of had knocks while away on internationals maybe get an extra week or two. They maybe don't take the trip to Bangkok and they get them back for Salzburg, yeah. And you'll see, you know, a couple of them sort of coming back in stage like that, because that's you know, based on evidence of the past few seasons they've done that.
Yeah, I don't think the whole LT will go on the trip, or at least not the first part of it, but we shall see. The Asia element of it is interesting, Gareth, and I wanted to talk to you about it because me and you did the last Asia tour. It's fair to say Klopp was quite vocal on a few of the elements from there. Since then, there hasn't been one. I guess, you know, they've got to go back eventually. It's going to be fantastic for the supporters out there, and yeah, we should say that. And someone got in touch with us. We after it was mentioned a little bit on the review, saying, well, I'm going to this game and I'm really looking forward to it. And look, it's brilliant for the passionate fan base who are out there, not just in Asia, but I know people from Australia are going. So, you know, not knocking it in terms of what it's going to mean to those supporters who are going to go and see a few of us are going out. You know, we'll have a brilliant time. But as a pre-season tour compared to the ones in America, it does have its challenges, and we even found that when we were just talking.
Yeah, it was hot, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was hot, it was humid, it's like sort of monsoon season or whatever as well, and there were some issues with the pitch last time. But look, I think we just got a cop for it now. I can remember sort of early days at the Anfield app when we would talk at this time of year, and, you know, I can remember coming to the table and saying, you know, there's clear evidence that says that, you know, for athletes, and that's what they are, it's not ideal prep to go to the other side of the world and then expect them to be in tip-top condition around that. And again, with that, when I said that, you know, I got some criticism from fans on the other side of the world who were like, well, this is our opportunity to see them, though, in the flesh. I mean, it's a huge sport now, isn't it? It's a huge game. Liverpool are a huge football club as well. I mean, you know, just to get a dig in at City, they probably only got 2 games because no one's asked. You know, Liverpool have got to make the effort around pre-season because it is their only opportunity to go to other parts of the world. And that game in Bangkok, I mean, that's like, you know, against Man United, that's like the Rolling Stones against the Beatles, you know what I mean? It's absolutely huge. They'll go mad for that. You know, we'll see, like, really mad pictures of them getting greeted at the airport and all outside the hotels, and I'm sure it'll be a sellout and all that kind of thing. And, you know, when we were out there, you know, I remember us saying, like, the support was unbelievable, and it was quite... I mean, I don't want to sound patronising, but the word was, it was quite sweet in a way, yeah. wasn't it? Do you know what I mean? Because it was a different type of atmosphere. It was like an atmosphere where they were in the ground, they were in awe of the fact that they were seeing Liverpool Football Club in the flesh, and that was nice. Do you know what I mean? And look, you know, there's arguments raged for years about sort of the makeup of the crowd and who gets the tickets and who supports the club and all this, but I've sort of long since given up on all of that because it's a waste of time, because you have to cop for the fact that Liverpool are a global club and a global brand. The club, the Premier League and everything else, the television companies have ramped that up as well, and it is now one of the biggest sports in the world. And Liverpool benefit from that on the regular in terms of, you know, the money we get in, the players we're able to bring in, the manager we've got, all of that. It's because Liverpool's so big and such a big football club. And it would be easy to be much more provincial and less successful. Like, I don't know, certain other clubs we could mention.
You haven't got a kit yet.
Yeah. So, you know, I look at it in a very different way from when we first started out the Anfield. I've got to be honest with you, in that I look at it and say, good. Do you know what I mean? I'm glad that they're going out there. I get that there probably still is sports science arguments to say in terms of your sleep, the disruption, long-haul flights and all that. There will still be sports scientists who say this isn't ideal and you should just be playing Chester, Exham and Tranmere or something. But I actually think it's brilliant now. I think it's good. I like the idea of it. And as you said, I think the most important aspect of it is that, you know, these different communities of Reds get to see the Reds in the flesh. I think that's a lovely thing.
I think the other thing from the club, from a commercial aspect as well, is obviously with COVID, they haven't been able to go to Asia for what feels like a long time. Yeah. So, you know, I think even, is it the year after we won the title, we were in America as well. So, no, sorry, that's not right. The season before we won the title, yeah, we were in America. Yeah, and then obviously the rest is affected by COVID. So this is Liverpool going able to sort of showcase themselves as winners now as well. And
yeah, you know, it's a different team and a different outlook.
It is as well, and obviously, you know, in areas where the club isn't based, that will influence a lot of people and who they support and whatnot. Like that, it is typical that a successful club will be supported across the continent. I felt it even in Europe this season that people were so much happier to see Liverpool, even in Paris before we went to ground. People were so happy to see Liverpool and had so much respect for this team. So I think this could be like no other. You're taking star, like when we used to go, people be going mad for Fabio Barini and, you know, players like that. Well, what are you going to think about Mo Salah turning up? You know, Thiago, these absolute global superstars that now play for the club that they loved, even with Jay Spear and knocking around his back. So so maybe he'll get a game. Yeah, but it's a different Liverpool turning up, which is what my point is. And you can't, in this day and age, you can't turn down them commercial benefits.
Well, I mean, you mentioned the commercial benefits there, and I don't think it's a coincidence that the deal was started, Standard Chartered's up next season. And they're trying to get a lot more money out of them, and I don't think it would have been unreasonable to say, well, are you coming out here then? They're based in Singapore, aren't they? So I think a lot of our partners and stuff, you know, are sort of based out there, really, and I think, you know, eventually you do have to take the product to them.
Of course, yeah. And like, I always thought Liverpool, historically, especially growing up as a kid, but we're making the joke about Everton not having a kit up, but Liverpool used to behave the same. You know, there never used to be a telly in the ground. The marketing department was horrendous.
It's probably just one person.
it probably was. And that now, like, I do a bit of travelling. There's a Liverpool club shop in Dubai Mall. For example, there's no other club shop in Dubai Mall, but Liverpool have got one. You know, they're much more on it, and we're talking about the pre-season planning, and we look how organised we are. It's boxed, the transfers are done, this, that, the other, everything's well done. But also we're doing that side well as well, and I think it's all great.
Yeah, I feel like the compromise here, Josh, has been how early it is, and to be honest, how early it has caught us out a little bit. We've got a London live show on the Saturday before the Bangkok game on the Tuesday, and so shout out to Craig Annan, who's had an interesting few days sort of looking at flights and getting us all out there and sort of trying to do both, but we've managed it. But I feel like that's the compromise. I don't think Jürgen's thinking about our live show, by the way. He's thinking about, well, you know, what Gareth was saying before, there is knock-on effects to these players, so instead of maybe doing, you know, the Chester and Tranmere game, you know, like we, which the Gareth again was talking about, which was the early you know, at the early sort of build up, really sort of getting a few back a games for sort of the youth lads. It's like, well, let's go as early as we can, and then, you know, what we're going to come on to here, he looks like he's got his week or so in Austria that he can really start to hone them.
Yeah, and I guess that's sort of a worry for you know, as I mentioned, the sort of fan experience in Asia is how many of those, you know, stars that Paul and Gareth have mentioned there will be able to go out to those early ones, because it is sort of an early part of it, and it's obviously from the club's point of view, as it's been mentioned.
Quite a few don't go away though. I was having a little look last night, and I noticed Diaz doesn't play any international, so you thought, you know, there's an opportunity him for there. I know Salah did the first one, but then did he sort of drop out? You know, there's a few.
I think he got injured as well, Salah, didn't
right? He? Okay, yeah. So what's going on with this? Yeah, I mean, you'd hope there'd be a good team out there.
I mean, Liverpool squad is such now that, you know, even
you've got like Mata Bermelo,
you got like Kevin Keller, who's a world superstar, who's scored penalties in League Cup finals and that kind of thing. So, you know, they're not going to get a bad team as such, but I guess the sort of top end, the stars, you may not see some of them out there, and I hope they do. I hope they get that chance to see those players out there. I hope that, you know, if nothing else, Klopp's able to take them out there to suck that up, because it's as much an experience for the players as it is for those fans out there. You know, Gareth mentioned the sort of overwhelming support out there, and the players should get a chance to see that as well. The players should get a chance to sort of touch all four corners of the globe and see how big Liverpool Football Club is, because, you know, that helps in terms of recruiting new signings in future when you've got players at Liverpool talking to their mates when they go away for the national team, being like, we went to Asia last summer and it was absolutely unreal. There was millions of people flocking the streets to come and welcome us off the plane, and, you know, watching us at the games and all those kinds of things. So you want them to have those experiences as well. I just hope for the fans that they get the sort of the global superstars out there as they are.
I think the other thing on that as well, John, is the agents of the players will be going, we want you on that trip. You know, the exposure that comes from that, the opportunity that comes to showcase just how big they are individually as a brand, will be really important for them as well. So the football for the manager will come first, but I think Josh touched on it. I think they've got to go out there and they've got a bit of a duty to do in terms of the commercial side and play the games, and of course showcase the club to the fans in that region. But you can see the hard work will probably start when he gets back to Austria. You know, the pictures of big long bike rides and four jogs a day or whatever it might be. I think that's where, as Josh says, Jürgen gets his wish in terms of being able to really drill the players, change any system changes, whatever. And also we'll have a bigger group we'll need to work with. So it's going to be quite intense for the players looking at this. It'll be interesting to see if there's a almost shaking of the hands before the game with Guardiola in that Community Shield game, though. I think, I don't know how many changes are allotted in that game, but you'd imagine that there's going to be two sides a half, I'd say, or a very changed game. I think obviously there's the Strasbourg game the day after, so they might go, oh, we're going to play a very strong 11 in that one and a weaker one, but I don't know. I think once he knows what's available to him, he'll be, I think the team that's almost in the Community Shield game might be a slightly changed team to the one that he plays the week after. I think he'll have his first three or four games, injuries permitting, already in his head, the teams, based on when they come back, whatnot. We've seen that at the beginning of the last few seasons, haven't we, really? Yeah. So, yeah, it didn't go so badly.
Certainly not. Yeah, just to recap a little bit, the last game of the Asia Tour is on Friday, July the 15th. I know they're flying back straight after the game for that one. So presumably have a couple of days off, and then it'll be off to a training camp, Robbo, in Germany or Austria. We sort of don't know where yet, but like Paul says, it'll involve a lot of cycling. And you feel like that's where Jürgen Klopp's identified that, you know, I want to do my real work on next season. You know, if people are late coming back, you know, we want them around for that. You know, it's another benefit of getting all our transfer business done early, which we'll come on to talk about a little bit later as well. But you fancy, you know, I don't know how long they're going to be away for. You know, it'll be at least a period between the two games, and maybe a couple of days either side as well, where him and Pep Linders will have really identified where they're going to do the work.
Yeah, I mean, you know, going back again to when we were out there in Hong Kong and we went to that open training session, you know, we were fortunate to go to that. I think we were both surprised, weren't we, by the intensity of that.
It was hard to understand what was going on.
Yeah, it was hard to understand what was going on, but also, like, they were really getting, like, I always sticks in my head when Woodburn, like, absolutely clattered Lallana, and it was like, whoa, three season, lad. Do you know what I mean? But, like, there was no old bar. They were absolutely going for it, like, and you thought, well, that's in front of, you know, like, a crowd as well, like, what happens normally. Like, there's no two, and we've heard stories in the past, haven't we, of, like, you know, players puking up and all that kind of stuff. Like, you know, he properly puts them through the paces. And I think the plan, I think you touched on it before, Paul, the plan will be to have them in a place where they start the season straight out the blocks. Like, there's no, like, you know, because once upon a time, like, the early results in a season used to be weird because teams weren't quite ready. They weren't quite cooked. They weren't quite, you know, prepared for the season. They were reaching fitness rather than being at full fitness. I think the way things have gone, the way this season coming is going to be with the World Cup as well, the fact that, you know, we keep losing league titles by 1 point and things like that, you know, they'll know that they've got to come out and, you know, it's 3 points every week, you know, let's go type of thing. So I think, you know, you're looking at it from the outside, obviously, but, you know, it looks like, and on what we know from before, like Paul was saying as well, they'll come out against Fulham and likely blow them away. That's obviously what we want, but what I mean is that, you know, it won't be like a half-arsed early season performance. It'll be, our aim is to reach that point, the break for the World Cup, top of the league, hopefully way out ahead, you know, a repeat of the season where, you know, when we're beating Leicester on Boxing Day and we're like, do you know what, it's nearly done here. I think that'll be the aim. That's like the blueprint of what they want again. And that's what they've got to do, because, you know, the levels now to win the league because of City and what they'll be doing are unbelievable. And that's why we're going to talk about whether the squad's ready for that and whether we need more signings, isn't it?
Yeah, well, come on to that. Just before we sort of round up on the pre-season, I find it interesting, Paul, these games are against Red Bull sides, and you feel like the bond, if that's not too strong a word, but it is a solid link now, isn't it? We've bought two players from Leipzig and one from Salzburg. I don't think I'm forgetting anyone. Obviously, it's Keita and Konate and Minamino. You know? Mm-hmm. So we're obviously looking at what they're doing and thinking, we admire the way they scout, we admire the way they play, and it's a good breeding ground, if that's not being too patronising, to good football clubs for what we want to do here. And stuff like this is just about just strengthening relationships, it seems to me.
Definitely, and you can see, obviously, there was a bit of research from our club going to their training grounds when we were building ours. There seems to be, I don't know if there's shared resources, but there's certainly mutual respect across both sides, isn't there? It reminds me a bit when you go to, like, Warrington and said, so it's twins with somewhere in Germany. It's like there's twins with Liverpool and vice versa. You know, there seems to be a similar sort of...
I go to Warrington for that, mate. Heighton's twin with Statmores in Germany.
Well, there you go. Son, I didn't know today.
One for the fact fans out there.
But, yeah, there's certainly respect. And, obviously, I mean, when Red Bull signs someone, I'm almost like... Oh, who's he? Will we be signing him in 3 years? Yeah. Or, you know, you're seeing a lot of this going on. But it seems to be the technical side of things, that obviously we've took some players, but it seems to be the technical side of what's going on there that we're most impressed with. Yeah. So, yeah, it doesn't surprise me. And it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, we've just asked, can we borrow one of their training grounds for a week or so? So, yeah, I think... I think them games will be pretty good as well. I think they're a good test. I don't know when
get tickets for them as well. If anyone is in able to get to either Leipzig or Salzburg, tickets are available, I think, now on our website,
boss. But I don't know where the Bundesliga and the Austrian league start this year. But we're early, aren't we? So yeah. I imagine everyone's pretty early, because normally it would be that they're a couple of weeks ahead of you. But I actually think it might be that there's a pretty level playing field for a change in these games. They won't run the arse off us.
By our website, I've just realised they'll be the Liverpool Football Club. I'm not the happy man, and he's just shit himself there, and he's going to be getting a phone call saying, where can I buy these tickets? They're on the Liverpool Football Club website available to buy now. Community Shield then, Josh, where are you on it? It's you know, Paul was saying before, you know, how intensely do you want to sort of take a game, you know, against the rival so close? My instinct is he'll want to start close to the team that he wants to start the next week against Fulham, and then we'll see the changes the day after. But again, as Paul said, I don't necessarily disagree with that. I think you'll see every sub possible, and it wouldn't surprise me if you take the first half seriously, and then you see them sort of tail off. How Man's City, you know, treat it is obviously up to them. But I remember the last Community Shield we played against City, it seems to take that format really. That you know, we went strong first, and then made a lot of changes, and I think them sort of less so, but. Yeah, it's a game you want to win because it's against Man City. You know, the fact that it's the King Power, I just find mad. But apparently, you know, only a couple of stadiums were able to host it, and that's what they one went for. Where are you at with it generally, and this season in particular?
I think you're right to point out that Liverpool in recent seasons seem to have taken the Community Shield quite seriously in terms of, you know, going strong. I went to the one against City at Wembley, which would have been the last one fans could go to, I guess, before last season, and. It seemed like, you know, Liverpool players were up for that day. It seemed like they were quite gutted to have lost it on penalties in the end. They probably should have won it in normal time. City seemed pleased to win it. Guardiola seemed pleased to win it. So, and I think we went away from it, you know, not sort of desolate in the way you would be if you lost a proper cup final to City, but we went away being like a bit like, oh, we should have won that. And that's a bit of a, you know, a bit of a shame that we didn't win that before the season. I think this one this year, given the King Power factor, given the earlier start, given the fact that it's literally in July, just feels like it's more one to get out of the way. I imagine Klopp will sort of approach it in a similar way in terms of strength, but I think he will really lean on all the subs, as you mentioned. I think I wouldn't be surprised to see a few people sort of playing in the Strasbourg game that next day, who he can turn around and say to, you know, Fulham's next week, but you've got every chance of playing that Fulham game if you play well today, because there'll be a few lads who come from the Community Shield who maybe aren't quite up to fitness and that kind of thing. So there'll still be places up for grabs by that point. I think that the earlier start in general will catch a few teams out, and as Gareth mentioned before, it's up to Liverpool to make sure that they're not one of those teams. Up to Liverpool to make sure that they start like a house on fire, because by the time the World Cup comes around, you know, anything can happen during the World Cup, and then anything can happen coming off the back end. That's a completely new set of circumstances for all the clubs across the Premier League to deal with. So Liverpool have to make sure they start well.
I think, sorry John, just touching on what Josh said there, that the World Cup's such an outlier for all this. Is the one thing I've got is trust that Liverpool have been looking at this for a long time. You know, we're talking about our organisation and stuff. Part of me feels this could be an advantage for us just because we're so good at stuff like this, and I've got no evidence to say why we'd be better of it or whatnot. It's just a sort of a belief I've got that we're so smart on everything that how will we formulate a fitness plan or some sort of strategy that will benefit us, and we always have to, because I know we've just signed a footballer for €100 million, but it's not typical of what Liverpool do, you know, and we've always had to be smarter in other ways, and this seems to be one where no one has ever had a World Cup thrown in the middle of a season before. But how will we have formulated a plan to gain on that? I feel like it, even in our transfer strategy and whatnot, I feel like there'll be something in there where they'll be going, yeah, this is how we jump on this. And I've just got so much belief that we'll find a way of gaining from that. I think the important thing is between obviously August the 6th, is it, and when they go off in the end of November, I think is when the season finishes. I think we've just got to be right in the race then, ahead or at least level. No stupid results. No 4 or 5 points behind City. I think you want to just be neck and neck then and ready to race home post World Cup.
Yeah, I just want to touch on that very last friendly before we go on to talk about, you know, how Liverpool are going to attack this season. The Anfield one the day after, you know, is going to be a weaker team, you know, no matter how he approaches that Charity Shield, about when it's going to be sort of weaker. But I know so many other people who are asking me already, well, how to get tickets for that game. And, you know, we were talking before about, you know, an opportunity for fans out in Asia to see the team. I guess we need to remember as well that a lot of people in the northwest of England don't get to watch Liverpool much, and this is an opportunity for them. It's going to be a much changed team. Everyone knows that. I think as well, it's notable that I think the stadium people at Liverpool like a little go the week before the stadium just to check that everything's all right, and, you know, obviously staff change over summer and things like that. So I feel like it's almost being used, these home friendlies now, and I noted before that quite a few clubs are doing them as a bit of a dry run for them. So, you know, the way we're entering stadiums is changing all the time and things like that. Check Evans where and checking Evans all right, but also let's get a few people in who can maybe bring the kids to see the team, who knows, for the first time.
Yeah, exactly that. One of my good friends from university is taking his lad to his first Anfield match, Strasbourg, and he got in touch with me about tickets, etc. And kids are free as well. Yeah. Under 16s, I think it is, are free. Obviously, when accompanied by an adult. So, you know, that's a good move. It's a nice move. And it's another opportunity to do something like that, like the way we talked about the Bangkok game. This is a game for where you can take your kids. And I know a few people who are doing it, actually. You know, someone else who's doing it with you saying they were taking someone very young. And I said all the best with that because, you know, I can remember taking my lad when he was very young and it's just like, want to piss, want to drink, want a hot dog. You know, like keeping them interested in the actual football is absolute graft. But it's your first one, you take it off and all that. But, yeah, I think it's good. I think it makes sense. I think no one will be cry-arsing about what the team is because, you know, you'll just be glad to be back in there. And, you know, if it's an opportunity for some of the fringe players as well, then good. Because, you know, there's already players that I think in the discussions about what we've got for the coming season, there's players that already seem to me to have been forgotten. So, you know, like as an example, like, where's Tyler Morton at these days? How's he playing? What's he look like? Is he likely to be anywhere near the first team? Some people are already writing him off, saying, oh, well, he struggled against Spurs. And I type, yeah, but you don't know where he's at now.
Yeah.
Because you don't know how his pre-season's been. You don't know what he's worked on with coaches. He might be there or thereabouts. Who knows? What's Elliot like? Where's Elliot at? You know, like, Elliot was playing, starting in midfield for us. People are cry-arsing about not having enough midfielders. But where's Elliot at now? Because if he's at a place where he's at the absolute top of his game, he could well be an option for midfield. So we'll start to get answers to those questions. But no, I think it's a good one. It's quite cheap. I think it's 20 odd quid, isn't it? Which, you know, in relative terms is cheap these days, kids free and things like that. So again, like, it feels quite positive, feels a good one. Know nothing about Strasbourg, like, and whether they're any good and what type of team they're going to put out, but it's not really about that, is it?
We'll worry about that the Friday before. So let's talk about what we're Liverpool are in terms of the squad then. So signings, I'm sure you all know this, but we'll just all recap together. We've got Darwin Núñez in, Calvin Ramsey, and of course Fabio Cavallo as well from Fulham. Out, Sadio Mane has gone to Bayern Munich. Divock Origi is left on a free. And Minamino, it's not quite been formally announced yet, but more or less we're expecting that today. I think that Minamino is leaving as well. So three forwards out and a couple of forwards and a defender in. I'll just quickly talk about what other clubs have done, just for a bit of context. Arsenal have done Fabio Vieira, look close on Gabriel Jesus. Chelsea, nothing yet, which is quite interesting. They've also lost Rudiger on a free, and Lukaku's gone out on loan. City have got Haaland in. Alvarez, who's coming, who was signed last year but stayed out on loan, but we're coming to the City, and look very close on Phillips from Leeds. United have done nothing yet. If you want to laugh, go on United Twitter, by the way. They're fucking fuming. And we've lost Paul Pogba, and Spurs have done Perisic and Bazuma. So, you know, in comparison with other clubs, I guess, because that's how league tables work, Paul, what do you think about what we've done so far, and where do you think we might still be a little bit short?
Yeah, I think United are close on agreeing a deal for De Jong from Barca, aren't they? But yeah, they're not even in my train of thought nowadays. I'll be honest.
I was going to put Everton in, but it was a quick sentence.
Yeah, zero. Yeah, get the shirt out first and worry about the rest. Obviously, I'm looking at City first. They've done what I think they had to do, but it's from a very high base. They signed a world class centre forward, which they needed. They've managed to cash in on one who I rate, but as you know, goals from open play is pretty poor in Gabriel Jesus. But I think he'll do well at Arsenal. I think he needs to go and feel like the main man. City, the other one they've obviously done is the lad from River Plate, is it?
Alvarez,
who comes highly rated. So they seem to have sorted the one for the future. I know Erling Haaland's still young, but he's established and world class now. But they've also got another one coming through now, so they've managed to sort that. I think it'd be interesting if they lose Sterling. I think that
well, there's quite a few sort of rumoured as maybe going Sterling's the one that looks the closest, but Gundogan and even sort of Bernardo Silva, who seems to want to leave every summer. But they sort
I'd
of
I'd be delighted if them three leave. Yeah. I'll be honest. I think the three
big
of them,
personalities as well as players.
Big personalities, won a lot, tremendous footballers. The minute Gundogan goes, I'll be delighted because he seems to score very important goals. But where we are, I think, is I'm pretty happy with what we've done. If the right midfielder was available, then yeah, I'd be all for it. I don't think it's desperate. There is also January, which it's not something that Liverpool have ever really done, but we've seen that they did it in the past now with Diaz, isn't it? And I think the squad enjoyed that little boost this year. I'm quite excited by Cavalho as well. I think that's obviously the Darwin Nunes ones took the shine off that signing a little bit, but I just feel like, again, what I was saying before, we're so smart that they must have seen something really good in him. Really good, because Elliot I knew nothing about, and he was really exciting. And Cavalho knew quite a bit about him, wasn't he, in the Championship team of the season and stuff like that, and was doing bits there. So I think we've got a good player there, but I'm intrigued just to see how he's going to play Nunes. I think that's the thing from him. Obviously really excited about the sign, and got to see him home and away last season, and came away from the ground in the way that I did with Minamino, going good footballer him, different, but I can only see us doing something wild with him, like, you know, like he's going to be the left winger now or something. I think his shape and size makes you think, oh, it's going to be a typically right through the middle, but I could imagine Jürgen's got something up his sleeve for us. And yeah, I'm really excited for that season, and I think looking at them signings there, I think the only thing that's going to happen is that I think City and Liverpool are going to pull further away, and I think Arsenal look like they're playing clever. I think they're going to be one maybe to watch next season, but Spurs as well, to be honest. I think they've bought pretty well. I think Bissouma and Perisic, and I think they'll probably do one or two bits more, but I think we're probably done, aren't we?
Well, yeah, well, we'll come on to that. Where do you think we are in terms of, you know, what we've done in comparison to our rivals, Josh?
I feel like we've done what we needed to do, so it's almost not in comparison to rivals, because I think that's the way that, you know, generally fans, particularly in the sort of social media age and the national media in particular, always want to look at it in terms of, you know, literal numbers of signings and spend and stuff like that, without sort of thinking of, you know, what Paul's saying there about how far ahead City and Liverpool are of the rest. I think the thing that would maybe concern me is that City, it feels like they've done what they needed to do. I would quite like to see some of them lads that you just mentioned there, particularly Bernardo Silva, to be honest. I would like to see people like him leaving City, because it gives them then more to think about. That's maybe the one concern I have about Liverpool, and it's a concern from a sort of really, really solid foundation, is that, you know, they've lost a big personality in Divock Origi. They've lost a guy who can come off the bench and get you a goal in a game. I thought then Minamino would be the Origi replacement, if you will, the man to sort of come off the bench and do that, and he looks like he's on his way out as well. So there's, and Sadio Mane of course is the sort of headline one of the lot. So I guess if you're looking at it in terms of sort of like for like, Liverpool have brought in three and so far three have gone from the senior pitcher at least, but it would be quite nice if there was maybe another one in the pipeline. I don't know if Liverpool necessarily need it. I think we always want sort of one extra. We always want one new extra face to be able to cheer for in pre-season and then going into the season. But I feel like Liverpool are in a good place with their squad. The squad showed itself, I think, to be pretty unmanageable last season. It showed itself, you know, that Jurgen Klopp couldn't keep all those personalities happy throughout the whole season. You saw towards the back end of the season that Oxlade-Chamberlain, who'd helped us out so much throughout January, doesn't even play a minute from March.
Couldn't get Elliot in the squad as well.
Exactly. Stop making benches.
Yeah, like a comment a few weeks ago when he was like, I felt that bad, but I was saying to him, like, I can't knock any of these lads out because they've done the business for me. So it is a tricky one.
And I think Jürgen doesn't like to do that. I think that's why you heard the comments when he first came into Liverpool about not liking to sort of deal with big squads, because he doesn't like to let these players down, really. He doesn't like to, you know, feel like he's hindering anyone's career. And that's why Liverpool had the transfer strategy they've had for so many years now, whereby if someone comes to Jürgen and says, I'm looking to leave, that the club try and sort of facilitate that for them. They don't like to keep around unhappy players, and that's the issue you have with a bigger squad. So I guess when I'm saying I want replacements like for like, Jürgen's got to think of it in terms of his squad balance as well. And I would say going into the season that the squad balance feels in a really good place.
This idea that we're done, then, Gareth, that was sort of, you know, put out to the media, if you like, a couple of weeks ago, having sort of worked in newspapers and things like that, and then obviously fan media for a long time as well, you know, and observe these things. What did you make of that? You know, the fact that it was put out that they were done, and you know, did you take it with a pinch of salt, or did you think, well, actually, you know, maybe they're putting it out for a reason? They want to say, like, everyone just shut up, but that's it.
Yeah, my thing or my take on stuff like that is always that it's not. You know, it's not Crown Court, it's not an investigation into government, it's football, and they don't have to tell you the truth at any point. And it doesn't matter whether they lie to you. And often they do, and often they change their minds. And I think there's plenty of scenarios where that might be the stance now. Like, if it stays like this, then we're not doing much. But for instance, if Oxlade-Chamberlain goes, which, you know, it's being said all the way along that if the right offer comes, he could go. If he goes, and then there's a continued situation around Keita where it seems that we're trying to get him to sign a contract. So far, he hasn't for whatever reason. And then there's supposed interest in him. There's always supposed interest in him. But for instance, if you let both of them go, then all of a sudden, well, you are going to be light in midfield, and then you could see them doing something. But I think it's quite obvious as well. Like, the midfield debate for me is absolutely fair enough, because Liverpool did want a player, they couldn't get him, and now, you know, the accepted facts around it are that they're kind of hanging on for Bellingham and they don't just want to sign anyone. But the very fact that they were going to go and get someone this summer suggests that, you know, at the very top of the club, Klopp, Linders, etc., they looked at it and thought, well, we could do with one more. So for a fan to look at it and say the same isn't mad, and I don't really know why we're all having a go at each other about it, really. There's always something, isn't there, do you know what I mean? Because if you look at our midfield, I just think, well, you know, that there are things in there that are cause for concern, to be honest. So, you know, I absolutely love Fabinho. I think, you know, he's one of our best players. He's absolutely key to what Liverpool do. And if he gets injured, there's no one else that's even close to him in that type of that type of player. There isn't a replacement for him. We end up putting 32-year-old Jordan Henderson there and saying, go and be Fabinho. And he goes, fuck's sake, you're having a laugh. So we could do with someone with a closer skill set to Fabinho, I would say, looking at it. And then, you know, up some of the others as well. You know, Keita is hit and miss. Jones was still, you know, he's still young and he can still catch fire for me. But right now, he's young. Elliot, just mentioned before, I think loads of ability, loads of potential. Again, though, young. So, you know, when you go through them, the first choice midfield of last season, the three that he picked the most, well, brilliant. Yeah, I've got no problems at all with Fabinho, Henderson and Thiago. But how often can you field those three in a really grueling schedule? That's the problem. And okay, you can say Milner can come in and fill in at times, and Jones can come in and fill in at times, and maybe Oxlade-Chamberlain, although I don't personally see that. But I think there's a strong argument to say that they should go and get someone. I agree with what I think you just said before, though. I wouldn't want Liverpool to just go and get someone for the sake of it. I'm not into that. Like, and Liverpool used to do that, and it's been proven to be a good policy not to do that now. So if we have to say, okay, this is one more season from this group in midfield, but then next season we're going to change it in a big way, i.e. go and get someone who's really top level and that's what we're saving the money for, then I can get behind that. But equally, yeah, that was a long answer to say no. I think the goalposts could move on the idea of them doing more. I think probably the big, you know, right now they're like, yeah, that's it, it's fine, unless this happens. Yeah. Basically.
I think we don't determine that opportunity sometimes as well. It's all the moves that happen in Europe that go, okay, well,
like Spurs coming in for Diaz and things like that. And like, okay, well, go and get him.
If Spurs coming or someone comes in for a target that was on our long list, or other moves happen that then create interest in our own players, you know. So all of a sudden, someone is interested in Keita or Oxlade-Chamberlain or even Curtis Jones or whatever. Yeah. You know, they're the things where Liverpool sort of need to go, well, I'm sure they do have midfield targets. Well, if you're going to give us that money we want for Keita, then, yeah, maybe we can do the deal for the player that we want, and I don't know who that may be, but I'm sure we're prepared for all eventualities. I'm with Gareth a little bit with the... I'm worried that... I was worried last season with Milner, Henderson, Thiago, and even Fabinho to an extent, not with his age, but he does get a knock. You know, you do see periods of Fabinho out the team. I do worry that a year further on, are we exposed? But I feel that maybe the manager's putting a bit more trust in Elliot and Jones this season. And I think we didn't see tons of Curtis last season. We certainly didn't see a lot of Harvey Elliott either. And that's for different circumstances. But it does make me think that he might be just looking at them ahead of maybe a bigger midfield transfer for next season. However, just going on what I've just said, I think if the right person comes available in the right circumstances, it wouldn't surprise me if Liverpool aren't going to go and plaster on the back of the newspaper, we're looking for a midfielder. It's in no one's interest, and we're smarter than that. But links do keep popping up. I seen one yesterday for a lad of Porto. I think he was 27. Is it Otavio or Otavio? Yeah. I'm not sure how you say it. It seems to be that there's a bit of a fire sale going on at Porto, and that made me think. I wonder if there's a bit of value in someone they quite like, you know. So that there could be. There's no smoke without fire, is there?
I think what we're saying here, Josh, is that the club can be agile and have proved themselves to be agile, and what's true today isn't necessarily true tomorrow, because circumstances change and you know, outlooks change and situations change with both our players and also other ones. And you know, with the Diaz thing, I don't think they did necessarily want to do it in January, but Spurs forced the hand. Everyone knows the story now, and then we go in for him. But I think a few others as well, you know, you look at someone like Minamino, who's on his way out now. I don't think at that point we were necessarily thinking, oh, we need a forward who can do bits and holes. But he plays really well against us. You know, we see there's a release clause there that can be targeted, and so they go for it. And so, you know, I think there's enough about Liverpool in the past to suggest that, yeah, we want to be planned, and yeah, we want to be structured in how we do everything. And yeah, like Gareth says, we don't just want to go, well, we need a midfielder who's the best one we can get, you know, right now for the money we've got. But at the same time, you know, if there is opportunities to suddenly come up, we're not going to say, well, we're not going to buy them because we told Paul Joyce we're done.
Yeah, these things, you know, it's quite easy to think are black and white, but Liverpool have, you know, so many plates to spin. Even in terms of, you know, what's not been mentioned is keeping current players happy. Like if Liverpool are putting it out to all journalists that they're shopping around for a midfielder, how does that make you feel if you are Oxlade-Chamberlain and there's no serious offers coming in? How does it make you feel if you're Harvey Elliott or Curtis Jones?
And you want to have big seasons, yeah.
Exactly, who are looking, you know, who want to get motivated for this season, who want to have big seasons for Liverpool. If Liverpool are actively saying they're shopping around for a midfielder, it doesn't help either of those two players. So there's all sorts of spinning plates. As Paul says, you know, most clubs around the world now are not soft unless you're a team who don't know whether they're playing in blue next season or not. And they'll know, you know, that Liverpool have been scouting their players. They get the scouting list all the time. They'll know that Liverpool are looking at some of their lads. And, you know, it's not in Liverpool's interest to be saying, oh yeah, we are looking for a midfielder, because then suddenly if Liverpool come sniffing around, there's a premium on that player, there's a premium from that club. So there's so much to manage if you are Liverpool Football Club. And as far as they're concerned, if you said to them right now, right, the window closes today, are you happy with your squad? They would say, yeah, because we've said that the whole time. But equally, if a player that is, you know, as Paul said, on the long list, if there's someone even on the short list, if, say, you know, if randomly Bellingham decides he wants to leave and Dortmund are going to sell him for 40 million or something, then obviously the circumstances change. But I think if you said to Liverpool today, are you happy with your squad right now? They would say, yeah.
Just to sort of finish up then, gents, and just sort of look at a sort of state of play in terms of Liverpool. Paul made the point earlier about, you know, everything feeling like, you know, it's well run within the football club and everyone knows what the job is. And I think what we're seeing the benefits of is just a very settled club. Like the owners have been in place a long time now. Obviously the manager has been in a long place. Signed a new deal, signed all his team up for a new deal. You know, the structures are in place, which allows Michael Edwards to leave and Julian Ward to come in a bit seamlessly. And look, we'll see on him in terms of, you know, whether it, you know, he's at the same sort of level. But everyone seems fairly relaxed about it. And when you look at sort of some of our rivals, you know, really, and you know, Chelsea have got a new owner who suddenly decided he's the sporting director and trying to do trades and stuff. And, you know, there's obvious problems at, you know, going on at United and ongoing protests. And it does feel like, you know, things are pretty calm at Liverpool at the moment. And sometimes, you know, calm isn't what people want. You know, I'm sure Spurs fans are that excited going into the season, our full, you know, pre-season with Conte and stuff. And, you know, sometimes calm is a bit boring, but boring can be all right.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't feel like, you know, for once that we're talking about final piece in the jigsaw for the first time in 25 years or whatever. And you know, aside from do we need another midfielder, there's not a huge debate going on in the fan base. And I think there is, someone used the word trust before, and I think, you know, by and large that's where we're at with everyone who's at the club now, pretty much. I know there are some people that I'm still not convinced by the owners, and that's their right to be. But I think generally, you know, the majority of the fan base are happy with the manager, happy with the majority of the squad. You know, there are bits and bobs, obviously. Like, I mean, we'd all love, I think, Mo Salah to sign a contract, of course, and there are varying views on that. But there's not like a big... No one's asking for an overhaul of anything. There seems to be good links between, you know, the academy and the first team. You know, it feels like what a club should be like. And for a long time, you know, I got reams of pages when I was producing fanzines, and we got loads of airtime talking about what the club should be doing, why we didn't like X and Y. A lot of that's gone, and there is a lot of trust there. So the club is in a good place. I mean, my thing all along as a fan has always been, like, I don't think you can demand that a club wins the league or demand that a club wins a European Cup, because we've seen ourselves the fine margins that those things rest on. What I think you can demand, and I think is fair to demand of Liverpool, is that you're in contention for these things consistently, that, you know, you're right up there at the top season after season. And that's what Liverpool are. If we take the mad COVID season out, of course, you know, you can see the consistency, you can see the levels they keep reaching finals, they're in contention for the title over and over again in a mad situation where you've got to get 90 odd points, where you're up against a club that's got all that money and all that, you know, resource, etc. So, you know, I think you know, you should be fairly happy about what Liverpool are doing right now, because there's been much darker days in the past. There are cycles in football, which I didn't used to believe in, but I do a bit more now. And look, there may be a cycle where Liverpool aren't quite as good as they are now, so enjoy it while you can. I do think, just on a slightly different point, I do think there is a little bit of a thing around what happened in Paris, and, yeah. And I do think, you know, the club, I mean, not to put any pressure on them, I'm sure they're not listening, going, oh, right, but, you know, but I do feel like there's almost like a pressure for Liverpool to be good and to give us good days again. Yeah. Because it's incredibly grim what happened in Paris, and it's incredibly dark, and it's incredibly dark for a lot of people. And I've seen a lot of people, I've sort of been trying to write something about it. Obviously, I wasn't there, but I think there's like a wider malaise about football among a lot of people. And I think Paris will have contributed to that. So there are people questioning, do I ever want to go to a final again? Do I ever want to go to a European away again? And perhaps even questioning, you know, their relationship with football. I think what the club's been doing is good around that. You know, you can see that the club is supporting fans. There was a sort of mental health toolkit thing go out the other day, and thought, you know, that's good that the club is making that kind of effort, because... Yeah, I do think there are people, you know, myself included, at times where you're like, you know, it's not a Liverpool thing, it's a football thing, like how we're treated as fans and how we're treated, how we're looked at generally. And you kind of think, you know, all the effort, time, effort, money that I put into this thing, is it quite worth it? Is it, you know, wow, it's run, how we're treated by police, all of that. It's incredibly grim. So, I think it can be swept away to an extent if Liverpool are absolutely brilliant and you just get caught up in that rush and that wave and you're like, no, it's all fine, what was I talking about? And hopefully that is what we get. And look, I might be wrong about this, when we get back in the ground again, you know, maybe people are just sort of muscle memory and back among friends and watching a good football team, it'll wash some of it away. But there's no doubt about it that, you know, that has left a sour taste in the mouth for a lot of people.
No, I think it's a fair point, Paul. And I think, you know, the Paris hangover, it's funny because you normally associate that with the sort of the players. But I think the players almost got it out of the system the day after when they did the parade and, you know, went away. But I think for the supporters, you know, it is a real thing there. And I said on the show we did last week, and do listen to that if you haven't yet. I spoke to Dan Austin at length about the Senna hearings, and you know, he watched all of them, you know, as obviously a French speaker, and was able to sort of, you know, let us know what was going on. And then I spoke to Joe Bloth from Spears & Shanky about what they're doing. And I said to Joe, I feel like Paris has affected me in terms of, you know, my mental health and my mood. I feel like I'm, you know, get angry over really sort of small things. And I'm like, why am I getting pissed off about that? But it's obviously, you know, it's something in you that's there that you may be trying to suppress. I don't know, but I think, you know, generally that's more my concern than how it's affected the footballers, really, is that everyone going to be ready to go? But like Gareth says, you know, nothing solves that, but like gone 3-0 up in half an hour against Fulham, maybe.
Yeah, and I think all them points are valid. Obviously, I was going into the ground with Dan, so we've both very, very similar shared experiences of that day. I think the one thing I was personally quite lucky with was I literally got home from Paris and went away with my family for 10 days and just sort of binned football for 10 days, which was nice. And that's, and then I came home and I've been to the 3 gigs in Anfield and I've been back in the ground and I felt, you know, I've been in stadium environment again and obviously one that I'm very familiar with. So it's not something that's on my mind, but I can imagine that a lot of people who went to Paris that day really suffered. The one thing that I struggled with Paris, it's not something I've really said, is that it seemed to be the guys that were panicking and upset most were the guys that I know that are regular match goers, and I think that tells you how bad it was. It wasn't just your fair weather fan who doesn't go to many games and this is a bit much. It was guys who've seen it all, you know. Yeah.
See how serious it
is.
Yeah,
you can see that this is not right. We need to. And there was the guy that I know that I don't want to name or whatever, but I seen him. I had to completely remove himself from the situation, got out of there. And I seen him way away from the ground, you know. And I thought, well, I thought this was bad, but it tells you that other people also felt the same, you know. And Paris was grim, but I think from a footballing point of view, I think you're right. I think that parade, it was smart in a way, and I thought when they announced it, because obviously we've won the two domestic trophies, I thought, well, that'll be flat as a pancake if we don't win the European Cup and the league. And I thought at the time, I don't like that. I think we might be celebrating failure, or there's an opportunity to celebrate failure there, and it didn't feel like that at all. It was brilliant. It was really, really good, and the whole vibe of it and whatnot, I wasn't ready for it after what had been through the day before, but it was good to see that the players almost got a bit of a tonic there, you know, lift their spirits. Wow, we just lost here, and look, they all love us so much. Yeah. So they're not carrying the kind of fan expectation. Or we lost last season. No, we still see them as winners. You know, I think my only other concern going into the season, and I haven't heard that much said on it, is what's the impact of Mane going? You know, he's such a big footballer for Liverpool. Our best player for the final half of the season, and there's no guarantees that Nunes or Cavalho or whatever can fill his boots, and I think that's
in the short term.
I think they may well do, but even there's no guarantee that as good a player as Nunes is that he gets to the levels Mane was at, so, and that for me is just a point of concern, because I've got belief that Haaland certainly will improve Manchester City, but they haven't really lost to someone like we have. I think when Aguero left City, they felt it. I think there was a gap, and I think they've now filled that. I think we've obviously gone, here's our €100 million solution. It's just got to work, you know. And that there's pressure on him in that regard. There's pressure on the whole club. There's obviously the final year of Mo Salah's contract coming into that as well. There's a few clouds. But I think there's also a lot of sunshine, so I hope that can go. And I think I'm more half full than that, but I do have a little nag in the back of my head. Well, Mane is so important, and I knew that, and that's testament to him. And I wish him all the best at Bayern Munich. And the way he's left is great, and I think that's the typical way any player should leave a football club. But it's a big, big, big set of boots to fill.
I think the one thing the club would say is that they probably don't necessarily feel like they need the new signings to come in and have a short-term impact, because I think if you look at it, they would say, well, we've still got four ready-made really good options there who we know are you know, good enough to play for Liverpool Football Club. Diogo Jota seems to be a bit of the forgotten man, really, in the whole Sadio Mane saga. He scored, you know, 20-plus goals last season. I know he ends the season in a certain way, and I think you were right to point out before, Paul, as well, that there was probably, you know, a bit of tiredness there. Jota is a lad who on the sly has played.
He carried the AFCON can, I felt.
Yeah. Exactly, and he's played loads of football. He was playing huge games for Portugal while other lads were going away and playing friendlies and stuff like that. He was playing games to make sure they qualified for a World Cup and being, you know, I don't know if talisman's the right word, because they've got Cristiano Ronaldo in that Portugal team, but being a big player for that Portugal side. So I think, you know, Liverpool will look at it and maybe not be so glass half empty about that. I think to talk about the Paris thing, Robbo was right before on the idea of I guess the word Malays feels like the right thing for me. I was sat on the bus back from Paris after, and usually after a Champions League final, like even after Kiev, we found a way to raise ourselves, because Kiev was just sort of football and sadness, wasn't it, really? Yeah. It wasn't everything else. Whereas like I got on the bus after Paris, and just, I wasn't even thinking about the football. I was thinking about, you know, actually in my head, I was thinking about how Liverpool's best spell of the game was the first half an hour. And for the first half an hour, I spent looking around the ground and texting friends and texting people back home to let them know I was safe and stuff. Like it wasn't about the football, and the parade the next day felt like a good tonic, because it sort of put a bookmark on the season for us to be able to say to the players, look, we've not won the two big trophies we wanted to win there, but that was still a brilliant season, and we've still had so much fun, and you live a season week to week, don't you? And week to week that season was absolutely brilliant, and that was a sort of nice thing. But I still feel a bit of that malaise, like even you saying at the top of the show, John, the pre-season starts next week, I'm a bit like, fucking hell, that's so soon. It's so soon after sort of everything that's happened there. I don't know. I mean I'm lucky in a sense that I don't really have to worry about being back in a football stadium until the second home game of the season. That will be the time where I worry about being back in a football stadium, and I'll probably be ready to be by that point. But for now, it feels like it's all sort of coming a bit soon off the back of that, and the new signings get you excited, and a win against Fulham on the opening day, I'm sure, will get me excited, and I'll be excited before then as well. But for now, there is still a sort of few concerns about, you know, how us as a fan base, and how individuals within the fan base as well will be looking at approaching this season, because it's easy to get burnt out. You know, Gareth mentions all the reasons you can get burnt out before, but, you know, being treated the way we were in Paris, being treated, you know, on a smaller scale, the way we get treated at European aways, you know, Benfica was another one this season where we were treated badly as away supporters. It can sort of make you wonder whether you want to bother with it. So I think, as we've all sort of pointed out, it's important, I think, because we had that chance to celebrate with the players at the back end last season, it's important, I think, that they come out and they say, right, we're all in this together now. Let's get Anfield absolutely rocking on that second game. Let's get that away and that Fulham packed out as well, as it will be.
Yeah.
And let's remind everyone why we do this and why we're a part of this.
Absolutely, absolutely. Big pre-season will certainly help us all. If you're going out to Asia, if you're going to any of the games, as I say, a few of us will be out there. We'll be doing events with Liverpool Football Club. I'm not quite sure whether they've announced them yet, but we'll just obviously keep an eye on their social media, and we'll be looking to share stuff. But we'll be at both games doing stuff on the day. In Bangkok and a couple of nights before in Bangkok and Singapore as well, but generally about come and say hi. We're really looking forward to going over. There is the live show in London just before that, July the 9th in Hackney at Earth. If you go onto their website, you can still get some tickets for that. But yeah, as we all said, it's all about gearing up. I think Liverpool are all set to make a flying start towards the start of the season. It's needed, as the gents have said, in every possible way, but mostly to get that league title back. Number 20 on its way, hopefully. Up the Reds. Sports Social Podcast Network.